Hey, we're all looking to save, especially on medical bills, but where do you start? Now, unless you're a medical billing expert, finding savings, well, it can seem impossible. HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your insurance, and they flag errors like overbilling or wrong codes and fraud. And you can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. Now, saving starts with knowing where to look. Go to their website. It's healthlock.com today before you see any other healthcare provider. Hey, do you want to get better at shooting without spending money on ammo or time at the range? Well, you're going to love the technology that is Mantis X. 94% of shooters, they improve within 20 minutes using Mantis X. Now, Mantis X is an at-home training system that you use with your own gun. It's called dry fire practice. It's high tech, but very simple to use, and it gives you real-time feedback on your shooting technique. You simply attach it to your gun. It takes seconds. You download your easy-to-use app. You follow the instructions, and you're good to go. You can use it at home. You can use it at the range. Even the Marines, the Army, Special Forces, they all use Mantis X to become the most effective force in the world. Mantis X is military technology, but all at a very affordable price. So be a responsible gun owner, increase your competence and confidence today with Mantis X. You're going to be amazed at how quickly your shooting will improve while saving a ton of money on ammo. Now just go to their website. It's MantisX.com. That's M-A-N-T-I-S-X.com. Hey, what if your home's title, which is the legal document that proves you own your home, is in some criminal's name? Well, that's called home title theft, and criminals all over the world can find your home's title online, and then they'll forge your signature, they'll take out loans against your home, or even worse, sell your home. Now, how do you know some criminal's not taking over the title to your home? You can find out with sign up at HomeTitleLock.com and use the promo code Sean, S-E-A-N. Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show Podcast. All right, so I have insomnia, but I've never slept better. And what's changed? Just a pillow. It's had such a positive impact on my life. And of course, I'm talking about MyPillow. I fall asleep faster, I stay asleep longer, and now you can too. Just go to MyPillow.com or call 800-919-6090. Use the promo code Hannity, and Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, has the special four-pack. Now you get 40% off two MyPillow premiums and two go-anywhere pillows. Now MyPillow is made here in the USA, has a 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee, and a 10-year warranty. Go to MyPillow.com right now or call 800-919-6090, promo code Hannity, to get Mike Lindell's special four-pack offer. You get two MyPillow premium pillows and two go-anywhere pillows for 40% off, and that means once those pillows arrive, you start getting the kind of peaceful and restful and comfortable and deep healing and recuperative sleep that you've been craving and you certainly deserve. MyPillow.com, promo code Hannity. You will love this pillow.
I know I'm up. I had to send an important text, 800-941-SEAN, if you want to be a part of this extravaganza. And happy, aren't you glad we made it? Happy Friday, and so glad you could be here. And I know there's a lot of news out there, and a lot of people want to talk about a lot of things. Steve Bannon is now left the White House. I don't even know what the latest is. I think it was a combination. Bannon had told, I think it was Maggie Haberman some time ago, maybe it was in the early days of the administration, that, you know, he was maximum 1 year. He never was going to stay that long. I did like what Matt Drudge had to say, and he's had an amazing run in terms of advancing an agenda that is, that other people talk about, a populist agenda, et cetera, et cetera. And I think it's had a very profound impact on how we define conservatism, although conservatism never changes. It's a philosophy. It is a vantage point. It's rooted in our Constitution and the rule of law, et cetera, et cetera. And I want to get into all of this and get to everything you want to talk about. I can't believe the state of affairs that we're really in, though, as a country. And from that perspective, that makes all of the things that have happened this week just really, really important that we put a perspective on. And I think that one of the things that I have been pointing out so regularly, and I think I've been proven right on, is that there are significant forces out there that want to destroy this presidency. And I've identified them. I've talked about them. We've isolated our discussions separate days about one of the five units that I say are out to get them. We've talked at length about the deep state, about what has happened in the intelligence community in terms of, and I want to always be very clear because I don't like when people sweep with a broad brush. In this day and age, we need the tools of intelligence. We need the best, the brightest in that community. The 99 point whatever percent of those in the intelligence community that do this hard job every day for us deserve our thanks. They keep us safe in ways we never know. We discovered in Barcelona that the CIA had actually tipped them off that this terrorist threat existed. And while they didn't get the guy that drove the van and plowed it into this group of people, they were able to stop six other people. ISIS, radical Islamists, they often use 2, 3, 4 attacks in a day. They'll do something small over here and something much bigger over here. And they were able to stop other acts that were planned yesterday in Spain, and they deserve a lot of credit. But when you look at the problem of the deep state is, well, if we're going to be surveilling those people, we need them to battle against evil in our time. Radical Islamists that want to kill you are evil. The radicals in Iran are evil. When you look at North Korea and Kim Jong-un, that represents a clear and present danger to the United States of America. That's evil in our time. And we got enemies like China and Russia and so on and so forth, more than we even know. So to defend the American people, we've developed the most powerful tools of intelligence available. And it is part of sort of like it's intelligence warfare that's going on. So we have knowledge and insight and understanding into who our enemies are, what they're plotting, what they're scheming, what they're planning, and what they're capable of. And the fact that you have agents on the ground that risk their lives and could potentially at any time be exposed, it's an enormous sacrifice on their part for their country and their family. But if you have less than 1%, 0.1% of those in the intelligence community that take these most powerful tools that we give them to protect us, just like we give our military the most powerful tools to protect us. Imagine if there was, you know, we love the military because they sacrifice so much for this country and risk their lives for this country. And so too do many in the intelligence community. And they keep us safe in a dangerous world. But imagine if 99.9% of the people in the services are good, but somebody in an important position of power that we give this incredible weaponry to, turned it on the American people. On the sense, the weaponry in the intelligence community is more powerful than, frankly, any novel I've ever read in terms of their ability to do the surveillance in this dangerous world. And thank God we have those tools. Well, what we've learned with the deep state is they have now, there are some, and I believe we're beginning to identify them. Those that are unmasking Americans. Now, there are some Americans that are picked up in general surveillance. And those Americans are supposed to never be unmasked unless they are committing some type of treason against their country. Those Americans are supposed to be protected. We have a Fourth Amendment constitutional right against unreasonable search and seizure. But if those Americans, all of a sudden, they're picked up incidentally, well, they're not even supposed to be, their identity is never supposed to be unmasked. And unfortunately, as a matter of course, there has been a massive, massive, dramatic political weaponizing of intelligence gathering against political opponents. And it happened by the last administration. And there are holdovers from the last administration. And there are people that don't like this president. And they're even gone as far as to unmask the names of Americans, leak raw intelligence. I never thought in my lifetime I would see conversations with a sitting president and a prime minister, like in the case of Australia, or a president in the case of Mexico. And the conversations are leaked to the American people and nobody bats an eyelash. Or the illegal unmasking and surveillance and leaking of intelligence in the case of General Flynn. And apparently, I keep reading that they want to investigate General Flynn. His whole career was destroyed because of a violation of the Espionage Act. And then we're discovering Samantha Power, the former UN ambassador reports that she may have been unmasking hundreds of people related to the Trump campaign transition in the last year. Is what now that is an abuse of the weapons of intelligence. Now, it is, you know, so when you talk about the deep state, it's very important that we distinguish between the good people that are protecting you and serving us and doing a good job and sacrificing for their country and those that are abusing. And the ones that are abusing, you know, very few in number and apparently at the highest levels. So that's what the president's had to deal with. That's only one. You know, this is now consuming whatever percentage of the president's time. And those that have worked in the president's White House. And I know we've seen a lot of turnover in recent days. And I know the president comes from a business background. And I know that it's an adjustment to this political world. And I know the president, while he doesn't fully understand that the media is another one of those, the five forces that are trying to bring him down, but they are. And so, like, when he gave his press conference on Tuesday, the best thing he could have done after he talked about everything about infrastructure, rebuilding infrastructure, nobody even heard one single solitary thing he said. Because then the media that had already been hyped up after he had condemned the evil and violence that we saw Saturday, but then it became a big thing. He won't identify them. I think I'm probably the only one in the media that decided to go back, look at the tapes, get the audio of the president, then the candidate during the campaign, then a private citizen, and all the times he's disavowed white supremacy, racism, and the likes of David Duke and the Ku Klux Klan. But they don't, there's no perspective. They don't care. And when he went out Monday, it still wasn't good enough for the media. And the media that has pushed without any evidence so far, any. And we're getting new information this week that they may be wrong. Tick tock. It's a message for people. They may be dead wrong about the narrative, Russia, Trump, collusion. What is the media going to do then? How do they justify all of their reporting for 11 months? How do they ever get their good name and credibility back? By the way, the media has no idea the level of exposure that's coming their way. None. The media they have gone so far out there that there will be a dramatic rejection of them coming, and probably very soon, because they have put their ideology ahead of the service of the American people. That goes the same for Democrats. They think that this is a good policy for them, or a good platform for them to just be no, and call the president, you know, just say Russia, Trump, collusion. And then we can say racist, even though the president condemned. And they can say it all they want. And it's not going to inspire one American to feel that they've got the ability to solve the problems this country faces. That's the shame in all of this. So you got the deep state, you got the media, you got Democrats, and you have the Republican Party that is frankly losing and lost all identity. You know, in part, all of what I have laid out this week on radio and TV and playing the cuts after cuts and the history of every 2-4 years, the race card being played in every election. Elect Republicans, black churches burn, and they don't want to count you in the census. And it's like my father was killed all over again, and on and on and on and on. They're the party of Jim Crow. It's like the Republicans have never fought back against what has been a false, lying narrative. And this is what is so infuriating. If you're a conservative, you know you have an instinctive revulsion at white supremacy, the Klan, Duke, David Duke. It's they're ignorant and beyond anything that I've ever met in all my years in politics. That's not the conservative movement in this country. Never was, never will be. And how they could ignore Hillary Clinton praising the former Klansman, Robert KKK Byrd, 5, 6, 7 years ago, whenever he died? J. William Fulbright, Southern Manifesto, you know, against the Civil Rights Act, Voting Rights Act, like Al Gore was. That's his mentor. And not a peep and not a word. Or, you know, President Obama. What do we want? Dead cops. When do we want them? Now? The group's leader gets invited to the White House. So when you look at the forces, they're all against the president. And it has made everybody's job there in the White House tougher and harder. And you got differing views. Now, I think General Kelly is probably, believe so, bringing in a new way to look at moving forward. And I think if the president gets a little bit of discipline and understands those five forces against him, I didn't mention the Never Trumpers, then I think if he focuses on the agenda, there's one litmus test that'll decide the success or failure of this presidency, in my view, and that is his success in keeping his promises, getting Americans out of poverty, off of food stamps, back to work, buying homes, and the economy growing, and keeping us safe and secure. That's what it always comes down to. In spite of the constant feeling you get if you listen to any liberals, read any newspaper, watch any cable news, for crying out loud, it's unwatchable. Except, of course, my show, Fox News Channel. I'm kidding. Well, not really. I think we give you more truth than the media in a day. I mean, there's more lies told than I've ever seen in my life. We're going to get to Maxine Waters vowing to take Ben Carson's ass apart. Okay, we have the Democrats rushing to defend the state senator who called for the president's assassination. Claire McCaskill urged the senator who did this to resign. Oh, Claire McCaskill must be up for re-election. I'm just guessing. Maybe that's a political thing. You've got the anti-Trumpers apparently torching an Abraham Lincoln statue, and that battle over monuments and memorials now continues. You do have a poll finding a plurality of African-Americans opposed the removal of Confederate statues, and that was from Marist, NPR, and PBS, their survey via Daily Caller. And you got a whopping 62% of all Americans feel that way. And anyway, so it goes on to say 42% of African-Americans believe these statutes should stay in place. 11% said they're unsure. 40% say that they should be removed. So I guess that's coming to a local state, local town, local municipality. And it's going to be a lot of local debates about that. There is a scheduled white supremacist group, I guess, is trying to and has a permit to go into Boston over the weekend. The mayor of Boston is saying, look, the courts have been unequivocal in their right to recognize all speech, whether you like it or not. We don't like it. And he was urging people to stay home. I think that's probably wishful thinking on his part. We'll have some more on that coming up today. Wasserman Schultz's computer tech guy indicted for lying to the FBI. We'll get into that. We're going to have more on John Solomon's report about Dana Rohrabacher's meeting with Julian Assange. And Julian Assange again saying, after he'd said it to me five times in five separate interviews, that the Russians were not involved in the leaking in terms of the DNC emails that came out in the last election. And he says he has the evidence and he has the proof. And I'm saying that Robert Mueller, if he's supposed to be investigating Trump-Russia collusion, he has an obligation to talk to and see if he can get that information from Julian Assange. And so we're going to watch this closely, as do congressional investigators who have the power of investigation and subpoena. Where are they in this, considering it's been an 11-month narrative? The intelligence community has offered no proof to this point, nor has anybody else. All right, we'll get to all of this and your calls, 800-941-SHAWN. You want to be a part of the program. Straight ahead. All right, 25 till the top of the hour. 800-941-SHAWN is our toll-free telephone number. You know, I've done a lot of the talking this week. Let me get to some phone calls here, and I'll expand on what other people want to talk about. Let's say hi to Amy's in Colorado. Amy, how are you? Glad you called. Welcome to the program. And have you been to any of the pot stores out there yet?
Not yet, Sean.
I hear they're doing really well. I mean, I hear it's a big business.
Yeah, supposedly they are, but I haven't visited one of those places quite yet.
No, I'm just teasing. Hey, what's going on? Yeah. How are you?
Well, I just had a little thing to say about the monuments coming down. It's really kind of a scary thing because I have a 10-year-old little girl. Beautiful little girl. She's my everything. We brought her here from Guatemala when she was 10 months old and brought her here legally, adopted her, everything. And I want her to know the history of our country. I don't want it whitewashed. I don't want it, you know, I want her to know it all and to be proud of our country that she's in. And I think it's part of our history that we don't always like to revisit, but we need to. I've been working with her at home about the Founding Fathers and all of that, so she knows. Because I think that's next. We're going down a really slippery slope here.
Mm-hmm. Well, listen, I mean, where does it end? And, you know, I keep giving other examples. Are we going to go to Woodrow Wilson, Hugo Black? Are we going to talk about FDR? Are we going to talk about Robert KKK Byrd? Are we going to talk about, there's a lot of controversial things of a lot of people. And, you know, Robert Byrd, 57 schools, et cetera, et cetera. You know, where does it end? You're raising the perfect point. Now, I just feel like everything at this point, we're not focused as a country on the agenda. And I think it's fine. Everybody can have all these debates. And I think it's going to be a local issue for a lot of people, probably for a long time to come. And you're going to have both sides of that debate. And it's probably at times going to get ugly, sadly, and more intense than any of us like. But I'd like to see the people that are elected focus in on the people that need the most help in the country. And there are people suffering in poverty on food stamps and out of work. And I'd like to see our country focus on safety and security. We saw the carnage and the terror attack in Barcelona yesterday. And I'm not going to be able to convince anybody, but those are things that I think we ought to be focused on. And if people want to spend their time and attention on those other things right now, they can. But to me, we've got a lot of suffering going on here and a lot of danger that this country is facing today. And there's also a lot of corruption within our government that has yet to be resolved. And I think we need to get on a more solid footing. And in the meantime, these debates can go on, too. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's just part of the bigger problems that we need to fix with our country and what we want President Trump to do. And so it is frustrating not to see his agenda going forward. And we need to concentrate more on the full agenda rather than just this.
Yeah, and I actually think we're going to get to it. And the reason I have some level of confidence, as long as the Republicans, I actually see some mistakes like they made with health care unfolding, and I haven't seen the bill. I don't see consensus building behind the scenes. I'm a little worried about all of that, and I'm not sure. Maybe they're going to go for something too big, and when they ought to be just going for the middle-class tax cuts, the repatriation of trillions. Corporate tax cuts are key. Energy independence creates, you know, helps us with national security and millions, I mean millions, of high-paying career jobs for people. It's going to go a long way to helping our economy. Also lowers the cost eventually of the lifeblood of our economy. Those are the things I care the most about. You know, building the wall has to be a big component of it because that's what one of the president's big promises. There's probably, you know, a sweet spot there with even the Republicans in the Senate to get it done. All right, let's go to Chad in Texas. Chad, hi, how are you? And welcome to the program. Glad you called.
Sean, man, I'm doing great. Thank you very much. It's always
great
to talk with you. Happy Friday. So before I go any further, well, first of all, I got to say you're the best in the business, and you inspire me a lot. Not calling today to talk about anything political because it's been a hard week. It's been a tough week.
It's been a hard 2 years. What are you talking about? This time last year was August, heading into the November election. But you know what?
Exactly.
Everything in life, think about this. Everything in life that is really worthwhile is going to be hard. It's hard to get a degree. It's hard to develop a marketable skill. It's hard to get along with people. It's hard to deal with the politics that everybody deals with in their offices. This is not unusual. What's unprecedented is the fierceness and the force and the coalition that has been nonstop against this president. So, you know, yeah, life, to do good things, you're going to take a lot of heat in life. You bet.
Exactly. And everything is spot on, what you just said, as always. But the microscope it this week, I didn't want to call in to bring up anything going on this week, the statues going down, what happened in Charlottesville, what happened in Europe again. Something totally off the subject here. Maybe have to get it. It is Friday. It's time to have some fun. You do martial arts, that you tell your audience you do that. Are you a boxing fan? Are you a big boxing
fan? It's part of my training. Yeah, I'm a big boxing fan. I'm a big MMA fan. And I.
Are you going to go to the fight next week, the Mayweather-McGregor fight?
I honestly may. I'm trying to work it out that I can go. And, you know, my schedule's really tough. I know that I have a path to get tickets because you can always get tickets on StubHub, and that's where I always buy my tickets.
On Friday.
Honestly, it's not a bad idea. You want my thoughts on the fight? Look, if McGregor could kick, this fight would be over in less than 30 seconds.
Mayweather wins in boxing,
yeah,
and McGregor wins in MMA. It's that simple.
It's that simple to me, too. It is interesting they dropped the ounces on the gloves down to 8 ounces, I guess, versus, what, 10, 12, 14, depending on who's boxing. And they even use, I think, 16-ounce gloves in some places. Look, as part of my training, I do a sort of an eclectic blend of arts. I do Krav Maga, I do Kempo, Jiu-Jitsu, and boxing. And it's all sort of, and I couple it with blade and firearm training. And I've got the best videos if I could post them. I can't post them because then the left will go insane. But we do really heavy training, grappling, fighting. I mean, it's real life fighting. That's what it really is. Except there's a rule, you can't punch me in the face.
Hey, when are you coming when are you coming to Dallas again?
You know, I don't have any plans right now. I had been thinking about putting a show together and heading out on the road. And I just have been so busy. The schedule's just busy. I mean, it's a very busy time. And I my main focus, I want to focus every day like a laser beam on the show. But I do love, I think this, if it was a fight, a real fight, McGregor, it would not be close. And listen, I like Mayweather, and he's a real champion. And I got to give him so much credit because he's a smart champion. I mean, but his fights are boring to me. You know what I mean? He does so much. He's so good at avoiding being hit that I'm like, oh, I want to see some brawling in there. That's kind of why I like MMA. Yeah. And some people really hate the sport. I've taken people that had never been really that initiated into it, and they see the first sight. All right, I have no idea where this is going. I thought you weren't going to get political on me. All right, let's get to our busy phones as we check in with Joe is in Charlotte, North Carolina. Joe, hi, how are you, and welcome to the program.
Sean, love you so much. Quick question, where are we at with the timeline that Paul Ryan promised you? You sat down with him, he made promises to me and all the other American people. Where are we at with that?
You know, I actually have a request into the speaker to get an update, and I already know the answer. And look, they ran into, and I don't make excuses here. In many ways, for me, there's no excuse, but I have to be blunt here. The House has been infinitely better than the United States Senate. I talked to so many people during that health care debate, and it was rolled out in the wrong way. And nobody knew what was in the bill, and there were many frustrated people. But at the end of the day, they didn't quit. They fought it out. They got it passed. They did a competent job, not what we wanted, but it was complicated too by the fact that you had 100 Republicans that had no intention of ever keeping their promises. You know, and I guess Mitch McConnell, in this sense, I'll say this. I mean, I'm very unhappy. I mean, it's sort of like he's an order taker. And I'm like, wait a minute, you got to lead these people into keeping their promises. That's what makes you the leader. And frankly, he led in a very strong, solid way on Neil Gorsuch. And he held the line and he did what the Democrats did. He needs to move to get rid of the supermajority and the filibuster. And he needs to start moving legislation forward. And he needs to start saying to people like Lisa Murkowski and McCain and all these other people that voted to repeal in 2015, and then they voted against it when it meant something. Now, those people will pay their own individual price, but you shouldn't have just a handful of people that are literally holding the party hostage and the promises of every other member hostage the way that it's gone on in the U.S. Senate. And that's not the president's problem. Republicans have... You know, they want to turn all of their blame everything on the president for their inaction. And John McCain wants to blame those of us on radio and TV that we should go straight to hell. As he said, it was so nice of him when he came back after his operation, and we've been wishing him well.
Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them.
Hell with them. Hell with them.
They don't want anything done for the public good. Our incapacity is their livelihood.
Incapacity is their livelihood. No, I'd be celebrating success. And with all due respect, Senator, you're the one that broke your promise, not me. You're the one that didn't get your job done. We're getting our job done here every day. And the fact that you don't like being called out on it is not our problem. Anyway, I appreciate it. Thank you, Joe. And let's go to... All right, Tom is in Lynchburg in Virginia, the home of Liberty University. What's going on, Tom? How are you, sir?
Hey, Sean, I'm doing good. Hey, I just want to ask you a question. You got Wolf Blitzer and all these stupid people on the left saying that the terrorist attack in Barcelona was a copycat of Virginia. Do you think the American people believe what CNN and MSNBC is saying?
I think by the end of this year, there is going to be a dramatic, unforeseen impact on the media that they just don't realize. They can't see the forest through the trees. They have now become so obviously agenda-driven. It's almost like everybody's become like Dan Rather and they don't know it yet. And we know how Dan Rather ended. Not very well for Dan Rather.
Yeah.
And so I think what's going to happen is, and I'm just saying here, they've gone so far out and have been so wrong and have lied so often and have been so ideological that when certain bits of information that I believe are coming out, that they will have, it will almost become incapable. They'll become incapable of ever getting any credibility back. And they'll just be viewed as an extension of, you know, left-wing blogs and left-wing this and left-wing that, and that'll be their audience. And people will recognize, even those people that didn't maybe to this point, just how abusively biased and how power-hungry and money-driven a lot of these companies are.
Do you think the percentage of Americans believe what they say or not really?
I think there's still a percentage that does, actually. And I think, but more people are becoming hip to media bias every day.
That's scary.
You know, we saw collusion in the election with the Hillary campaign, but they didn't talk about their own collusion when they're exposed as having, you know, advanced conspiracy theories and outright lies the way they have. They're going to have a problem dealing with it. It's going to be a major credibility crisis for them. And as much as they'll try to ignore it and spin it and just move on to some other new attack against the president, because that seems to be what their agenda is all about, especially cable news, just, you know, CNN and MSNBC, they're just extensions of the hard radical left. That's all they've become. And, the stuff I read, because I don't watch this stuff, if it wasn't so bad, it'd be somewhat comical. You know what I'm going to do to Katie Hawkins, the gobby one, later in the program today? I'm going to make her listen to our Florida Friday Georgia Line concert series because she just hates it. She has zero taste in music, as we know, with her intro music that we play on the program. That's coming up later today. All right, when we come back, hour two, Bannon out of the White House. We'll get Newt Gingrich's take on that. Also, what has been an extraordinary week in terms of exposing sheer, utter, complete, and unhinged media, an unhinged left, and the attacks against the president, just totally unprecedented. We'll get his take. Also, Colonel Alan West checks in the next hour as well. We'll also leave time for your phone calls. And we have one congressman that's saying, hey, Mueller, you need to come before Congress and explain what you're doing. Maybe he can do that on his way to Great Britain and the Ecuadorian embassy when he sees Julian Assange. Quick break, right back on this Friday. Glad you're with us. Sean Hannity Show.
Just yesterday you were saying that the president should take a page out of a book that he wrote, what, 20 years ago?
20 years ago.
Called The Art of the Comeback. Do you think he needs a comeback?
Yeah, I think he's in a position right now where he is much more isolated than he realizes. On the Hill, he has far more people willing to sit to one side and not help him right now. And I think that he needs to recognize that he's taken a good first step with bringing in General Kelly, but he needs to think about what has not worked. And you don't get down in the 35% range of approval and have people in your own party shooting at you and conclude that everything's going fine. I think right now that if he wants to get his agenda enacted, if he wants to get things done and have a presidency that's stable, he's going to have a couple of serious changes. And I think that requires, I think The Art of the Comeback, which is a fascinating book he wrote in 1997, is really a helpful reminder. That's where he's at right now. He needs to think about what hasn't been working and what is he going to do that it will be more effective in the rest of his presidency.
All right, that was Newt Gingrich on with Bill Hemmer on the Fox News Channel. 800-941-SEAN as we kick off hour two of the Sean Hannity Show. And Steve Bannon now is out of the White House. And Mr. Speaker, welcome back. You had a lot to say this week, basically suggesting he is isolated. He does need a bit of a reset and some other things. I want to examine this in detail with you. And what did you think first of what happened with Steve Bannon?
Well, I think when Bannon made his comments about North Korea, where he basically publicly disagreed with the president, Secretary of Defense, the Secretary of State, the National Security Advisor, the U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, and the President's Chief of Staff, and then I've said publicly several times now, it's fine for Steve to say that in the Oval Office to the president. It's fine for him to say it in a senior leadership meeting, but you can't go public on something as important as war and undercut all the elements of your national security team. And he did. And I think at that point, it got to be a question of you know, how are you going to create order if everybody's on the same page except one guy, and that guy's publicly talking to the press about his view?
Well, I think it's been building, though. Didn't you get the sense that this was kind of building and that there's almost been factions within the White House battling themselves now from the very beginning?
Sure.
No?
Look, there have been factions from the day they won the election, and there have been hard feelings on both sides. Ironically, I think one of the challenges that ultimately weakened Bannon was a book that suggested that Bannon was the real strategic thinker in the White House, and you know Donald Trump even better than I do. I was reminded of the moment when Rudy Giuliani was solving the problem of murder in New York and had a brilliant police chief, but Time magazine made the mistake of putting the police chief on the cover, not Giuliani. And 6 months later, that police chief was in Los Angeles. People who are as successful and as aggressive as President Trump don't want to be told that they're secretly the puppet of somebody else. And I think that was the first real weakening of Bannon's ability to survive. And I think, I don't know what he was doing the last 3 or 4 days, but his, you know, these interviews with reporters and claiming that it was off the record, I mean, that to me was so amateurish. I mean, Steve Bannon's a very professional, very smart guy.
No, I don't think, I think it was by design. I think he knew that it was coming to a head, and he wanted to get out there and get some of the things he wants out there, which is perfectly fine. It probably would have been better if he left, but whatever. It doesn't, you know, here's the thing, though. This president is under unprecedented fire, and a lot of it is really unfair. And, you know, we use this whole example of Charlottesville. I mean, I've been playing a history of Donald Trump disavowing, denouncing, you know, going through the whole laundry list again and again and again. It came up all throughout the campaign. And on Saturday, he gives a statement talking about the evil of those people that created violence, but he didn't mention the name, and the media collectively had a meltdown. Then he does it all again on Monday, and then it wasn't enough for them either. And meanwhile, they would never criticize Hillary. Her mentor is the former Klansman of modern day, and that's Robert Byrd, praising him to the hilt, or J. William Fulbright, you know, somebody that signed on to the Southern Manifesto and was a known segregationist. Well, that's Bill Clinton's mentor. So there's a lot of hypocrisy, but there's an urgency to really take down this president.
Well, of course. I mean, look, I think you have to start every day with an understanding that this is a president who has challenged the entire national establishment, probably more explicitly than any president since Andrew Jackson. And so the nationals, I keep telling people, when you drain the swamp, the alligators aren't going to be cheering. You know, and so you have lots of people out there who want to beat him one way or the other. And if you're a left-wing Democrat and you still have not recovered from the extraordinary shock of election night when you went from 8 p.m. Hillary Clinton's going to break the glass ceiling to 11 p.m. oh my God, you know, Donald Trump's going to be president. There's a whole block of millions of people who have never recovered. I mean, they're in a psychological state, not a political state. And there's a brilliant column by Scott Adams, who does the Dilbert cartoons, in which he talks about how can you tell if you're in the middle of mass hysteria. And this last week has been mass hysteria. I mean, it's that simple, that direct.
Okay, so now the Republicans have not been particularly helpful. You pointed that out. He's separately had Twitter battles and public battles with Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham and John McCain and some others. And yet they have 52 senators. He's got a very ambitious economic agenda that's got to be passed.
Sure. Nothing has to happen. I once brought in the father of the quality movement, Edwards Deming, and we met about 15 members of the House back in the early 90s just before he took control. You know, one of the members said to him, well, X has to happen. And Deming said, no, you can just fail. And I think it's very important to keep that sense of humility. There's a lot of stuff you and I want to get done. There's a lot of stuff President Trump wants to get done. And there's a lot of stuff the country needs to get done. But part of what that means, and this is why I cited his book, The Art of the Comeback, he's got to go back to team building. I mean, you know, if Mitch McConnell's not on his team and Paul Ryan's not on his team, there's a profound problem underway. And the president's going to have to spend some time rebuilding a team relationship if he's going to get anything done. Otherwise, we're going to go through another year and a half that's a disaster, and then we're going to end up with Nancy Pelosi. We cannot afford to not pass a tax bill. I am very worried that I'm watching them go down exactly the same road of just bullheadedly explaining that they're going to do this massive, complex tax reform, and I think they have no idea how hard that's going to be. I was there in 86. I saw how hard it was. That was Reagan's second term, not his first term. They'd already passed the big tax cuts that created economic growth. They didn't try to pass tax reform in his first term because they couldn't have, and they knew it.
Why don't they just pass the tax cuts and get the economy going and get people back to work? How about
That's the whole point. I'm trying to get people to launch a whole campaign across the country. We know what we need. We need a big enough tax cut to have a huge economic growth in 18. We need a tax cut that really helps small business. We need a tax cut that helps the middle class. And we need a tax cut that gets us to a corporate tax rate of about 15%. There are a lot of ways to get that done, but trying to go through some very complex tax reform model it'll just fail. I mean, you and I'll be we'll be on radio and television and at Thanksgiving looking at an inability for these guys to learn. They have got to learn the lesson of what happened in the first 7 months of the year.
Have you told that to Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan?
I've told that to the president. I have told that to the president's senior advisors. I have told that to Senator McConnell, and I've met with about a dozen senators, and I've told it to Speaker Ryan and to Kevin Brady, the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee. And I watch them; they're very pleasant to me. You know, they know me. They're nice to me. Then they go out and make speeches repeating the same, I think, impossible goals. They need to be stripping down to a doable big tax cut and get it done by Thanksgiving.
And that's going to have the biggest, most profound impact on the economy.
Right.
And that's going to serve the people that voted for the president.
Well, it's going to get Ryan reelected as Speaker, and it's going to get McConnell a big increase in the number of senators he can work on.
They said that we've got to repeal and replace Obamacare. All right, now here are my four. I don't even think overly ambitious. I mean, McConnell talked about expectations of people being too high, including the president. Okay, pass the middle-class tax cut, the 15-17% corporate tax cut, pass the repatriation of trillions, really push for energy independence and a drive to unleash those high-paying career jobs for Americans, build the wall, and then chip away at Obamacare piece by piece. That's my overly ambitious goal. Is that overly ambitious?
No, I think that's a very practical, very common sense approach, and I think it's doable.
And it would work.
Right. And then you could go into next year, and you could have a State of the Union with a sense of confidence that we're learning to get things done. We could set up a nice agenda for 18, get that done, run for re-election as a party of prosperity and jobs and take-home pay and a party that kept its word, win a nice victory in the House, pick up six or seven Senate seats, and be in good shape. I mean, but you're right, but it's got to be simple, clear, and it's frankly got to have more discipline. I mean, the part of what made me start talking about the art of the deal was the president had a perfectly good infrastructure press conference. He had exactly the right people there to answer questions, and then his combative nature took over, and he decided he had to go back and refight Charlottesville. And he just ruined, I mean, none of the signals he was trying to send about infrastructure got out. Because the new, one of the lessons I learned the hard way over many, many years is the elite media will never cover your positive message if you give them an excuse to cover a negative message.
You know what's fascinating? After your 5+ years as speaker, you did write a book, Lessons Learned the Hard Way. And are you identifying a little bit with the transition that the president's
sure.
making?
Absolutely. And I'm also identifying, I saw Ronald Reagan go through two cycles like this, August of 1980 in the campaign, and then the Iran-Contra problem in late 1986. In both times, he had to reset. He had to recognize where he was, what wasn't working, what had to be fixed. And he was very disciplined. I mean, this is one of the things I think the President Trump has not yet really picked up on. The part of Reagan's great achievement was a level of discipline that was amazing. You know, and you got to figure out, this is what I'm going to do, and I'm going to stick at it, and I'm going to be very careful about it, because his opponents will never give him a break. So anytime he gives them an opportunity, they're going to hit him.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll have more with Newt Gingrich. By the way, his book, Understanding Trump, has now been on the New York Times bestseller list now 10, 11 weeks, and it continues on, including landing at number one in its debut. All right, as we continue with former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich, you know, I've been thinking a lot about this, and as I went through the history on television the last couple of nights of the Democratic Party, and every 2 years and every 4 years, they go back to that same playbook where they play the race card. And 1998, elect Republicans, black churches will burn. The James Byrd ad, Al Gore, Republicans have the wrong agenda for African Americans, and they don't even want to count you in the census. You know all the examples. It happens every year. And Republicans for, you know, 30 years or so have just been trying to say, not me, not me, not me. And it seems like this president is confronting a narrative and a lie that has been pushed for a long time. Do you think Republicans have been unwilling to take on this unfair accusation? Because I believe it's unfair. I don't know conservatives like those idiots we saw down in Charlottesville over on Saturday. Nobody I know supports them, likes them, and everybody thinks they're evil. And what they do is just morally repugnant.
I think that, first of all, we have to be very aggressive and militant in taking on those kind of attacks. And I think in the campaign that President Trump did a good job of that. I think, second, that we have to have programs. And one of the reasons I'm so passionate about a small business tax cut is it gives you a chance to reach out to every minority small business owner in the country, whether they're African American, Latino, Asian American, you name it, and have a real connection where they can see that the Republican Party and the Republican policies actually mean more money in their pocket that's measurable and real. And frankly, I think that beats identity politics. But I think we have to be more aggressive about doing it. I think what Attorney General Sessions is starting to do about these renegade cities, which is a term I like much better than sanctuary cities, that are breaking the law and that are trying to keep criminals. And to me, it's crazy. We talk about Barcelona, which was truly tragic. 15 people were killed. 11 people were killed in Chicago over the weekend. 40 people were wounded in Chicago over the weekend. How can the mayor of Chicago want to keep illegal aliens in his city when they get out of jail? I mean, why isn't he grateful and begging the government to take him off his hands? And you know, these are the kind of things where we have to be prepared to go places no Republican has gone two generations or three generations and make the case. I think we can win the argument that our policies, whether it's school choice or it is getting rid of criminals who are here illegally, or it's creating jobs for small businesses or increasing take-home pay. I think we have the potential, if we'll do it, to reach out very aggressively. But I think that's part of why it was so important in Charlottesville to come out very clearly that we as Republicans who believe in human dignity and believe that we're endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, that we condemn the neo-Nazis, we condemn the Ku Klux Klan, we condemn those who would discriminate. And then I'm perfectly comfortable coming back and saying I'm against hatred from any direction. And I'm prepared to debate some of those who, in Black Lives Matter, for example, ended up going off the deep end and in effect advocating shooting police. I think there are a lot of things that we can do that allow us to appeal to a amazing number of people. You probably saw Ron Fischow had a, in his Lunchtime Politics, had a poll in which 44% of African Americans think you should not tear down statues. You shouldn't get involved in trying to rewrite history. Well, you know, that 44% would be, you know, a dramatically bigger base than the Republican Party's had in our lifetime.
All right, Mr. Speaker, thanks for being with us. His book, Understanding Trump, New York Times, Amazon.com, Hannity.com. And it's your anniversary. Congratulations.
Thanks for
being with us. All right, 800-941-SHAWN is a number. Quick break. Right back. We'll continue.
Sean gets the answers no one else does. America deserves to know the truth about Congress.
It was inappropriate. I've said that three times now.
And are you apologizing for it?
No. When the president apologizes for what he says, I'll apologize.
So
but
you,
the, my
go as far to say your statement was inappropriate.
Yes.
You're not apologizing.
It was inappropriate. It was wrong. I posted it to my personal Facebook page, and I deleted it.
But you're not apologizing.
No.
I'm not apologizing for tweeting out she hopes the president gets assassinated. 25 now till the top of the hour. As I've been talking about pretty much all week, the left in this country is just utterly and completely unhinged. But this has now been growing and growing, you know, starting with Madonna wanting to blow up. I dream a lot about blowing up the White House. Robert De Niro wanting to punch the president in the face. Mickey Rourke and what he wants to do. And all these other instances of the left, or Johnny Depp talking about, when's the last time an actor assassinated our president? Wow, unbelievable. Joining us now, our good friend of the program, Colonel Alan West, is back with us, and he's here to give us his views on this and so much more. Colonel, how are you, my friend? Welcome back.
I'm doing very well, Sean. How are you?
Crazy times we're living in, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and what makes it so crazy, and you're right, it's about being unhinged, is the hypocrisy that we see coming from the left. You know, I'm sitting here right now and looking at a report of a GOP headquarters in New Hampshire that was vandalized, and the headquarters had the word Nazis spray painted on it. But yet, when it comes to accepting that type of violence or condemning that type of violence, you hear nothing from the left. How fast did the mainstream media, the liberal progressive media, move on from talking about what happened when there was an attempted assassination of GOP members of Congress? And the fact that you still have someone like Joy Reid, who was on MSNBC, who on one of her Sunday shows after Representative Scalise was shot, actually tried to justify it by doing an analysis of his voting record. These are the delusional, demented, deplorable people that we're dealing with. And I think that they are starting to overreach when you look at the attack on the Abraham Lincoln Memorial in I believe, Chicago. You know, where does this end? And we are not hearing the voices from the Elizabeth Warrens, from the Bernie Sanders, from the Nancy Pelosi's, from the Maxine Waters, Barbara Lee's. They're not condemning any of the violence that they are accepting from the left.
And it gets worse than that. Let me play Maxine Waters mentioning Steve Mnuchin and Ben Carson. I mean, and talking as though they, in the same breath as the KKK and Nazis. I want you to hear this. And then, of course, we had Maxine Waters, a bit of a meltdown, reclaiming my time. And I'm thinking, how do we ever get anything done if people in Congress are acting this way?
While the president was defending the white reign nationalists and the KKK and all of those alt-right groups that were basically out there in Virginia, literally beating and marching and ranting about Jews and black people, etc., etc. But this is what this cabinet looks like. Mm-hmm. Whether we talk about Mnuchin or Ben Carson, it's over a hug. He's got to come before my committee. When you think reclaiming my time that I give to Mnuchin, you wait till Ben Carson.
House.
Reclaiming my time.
With the Senate. Judiciary.
Reclaiming my time.
Okay.
Reclaiming
matter of
my
fact,
time.
Mr. Secretary,
I'm reclaiming my time, please.
Because I thought I was allowed to answer questions.
Reclaiming my time.
No, we didn't leave a message.
Reclaiming
we
my
spoke
time.
To the chief
reclaiming my time.
Council.
Reclaiming my time. What he failed to tell you was when you're on my time, I can reclaim it.
I don't know how you get anything done in Congress. And the president did not defend the KKK. He did not defend white supremacy. He condemned it Saturday. He condemned it Monday. He condemned it Tuesday. And he condemned it. And I played a tape of him on radio and TV this week where he's done it 100 times. Colonel,
well,
what's your reaction?
Well, very simple. You know, I would love to sit down and ask Maxine Waters a very simple question. How many Planned Parenthood clinics are there in your congressional district? Or any member of the Congressional Black Caucus asked them that. Then why is it that the Democrat Party so welcomingly embraces Planned Parenthood, who was started by a white supremacist, a person that was allied with the Ku Klux Klan, that talked about, you know, getting rid of undesirables, and her name was Margaret Sanger. And the fact that their Democratic Party nominee for president in the last election cycle was awarded an award, you know, in the name of Margaret Sanger. And so, again, this is why I am sick of all the hypocrisy that is out there. You brought up on your show about Robert Byrd and how so many people on the Democrat Party praise Robert Byrd. Robert Byrd was totally against the civil rights legislation, voting rights, and all of these things, along with Al Gore Sr. But the point is, if we allow the left to go back and purge history, then we're going to continue to go forward and not understand who the real supremacists, white supremacists are and how it got started. You know, no one in the Republican Party is out there embracing the Ku Klux Klan, white supremacists, or these neo-Nazis. But we see something totally different on the other side, where they have a history of embracing this, and they continue to obfuscate when you challenge them on it. So I think someone should ask Miss Maxine Waters, you know, how do you feel about Planned Parenthood and Margaret Sanger and what she stood for as a white supremacist?
Well, you see the Democratic Party constantly fighting to fund that organization. And you're right about all the bizarre views that Sanger had. And we've discussed them in detail. What do you think that the president at this point, because the way I see it, it doesn't matter what he says, how many times he says it, you've got five very big forces against them, Colonel, and I know you know battle plans very well, but in a sense, there's a political battle. You got more deep state leaking, unmasking, and surveillance leaks that have gone out against people. You've got a media that is absolutely against this president and advances false narratives. You got the Democrats, they're no help. Republicans can't even keep a simple promise. And then you got never Trumpers that want to prove to the world that they were right. I mean, he's got a lot of people against him right now. It's got to be pretty lonely in there.
Well, what I would advise the president to do is not go into the U-shaped ambush. You don't win when you go into an ambush. And if you know that there are people that are against you, you don't have to engage every single one of these. What you need to do is get with your agenda and get that moving. And you need to clearly articulate, you know, like a Senator Corker who came out and spoke against him in Chattanooga calling him incompetent. You need to have a phone conversation with Senator Corker and talk about his incompetence with the Iran nuclear agreement, which he totally botched up as the chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee. You need to be able to talk to Mitch McConnell, who said that the president, he's not familiar with his job or how it works in Washington, D.C. He has excessive, you know, expectations, and have a conversation with him saying, these are the things that you need to get done that you promised to get done, or else we're going to look for new leadership in the Senate GOP.
But if they get to that point, then every opportunity that the House, the Republican House, the Republican Senate, and the president had to make significant changes will evaporate. Because the American people are not going to tolerate them not keeping all of their promises.
No, you're absolutely right. And so I think that this is one of the things. A Ronald Reagan would call in a Paul Ryan and a Mitch McConnell and say, look, this has to happen because next November 2018, you guys will not be in a leadership position because you have failed the American people. You have failed. You have sold them a bad bill of goods. You have told them and betrayed them because you said that these are the things you stood for, but you're not doing it. So you can try to go out out there, and you can have members that are attacking me, but the bottom line is this, you guys are failing. And I think he needs to have that heart-to-heart conversation with those two individuals in the White House or by phone, whichever one is best suited. But the most important thing, when we look at what's happened with North Korea, the fact that we just had another Islamic terrorist attack in Finland, a stabbing attack, we need the president to stand up and be this visionary. I have always said, Sean, that he needs to give a primetime national security address that talks about the Trump doctrine, talks about how we are going to deal with and contend with all the incredible threats that we have between Russia, China, Iran, North Korea, and the global Islamic Jihad. Now is the time that you have to show that presidential leadership, and I think that's very important.
Well, I don't disagree at all. You know, I was talking to Newt Gingrich in the last half hour, and we got into a long discussion about, I don't think what they need to do is that complicated. I think they need to follow through on middle-class tax cuts, corporate tax cuts, repatriation of trillions is an opportunity. To me, they're under our feet. We have natural resources that would allow us, from a national security standpoint, to never, ever need a foreign drop of oil ever again, and in the process, we'd create a lot of millions of high-paying career jobs for Americans. I'd make that a top immediate priority. I think the president's promise on the wall must be fulfilled, and even if it's 200, 300 miles of the wall done, and you have the plans and the funding in place, Americans will accept that it takes time to build such a big wall. And the last thing is they got to chip away at health care, even though they failed leading into the August recess. They got to go back, and if it's piecemeal, then so be it, but get on it and keep your promise.
Well, you're absolutely right. And what we have to come to understand is part of tax reform also includes the health care reform. There were 20 new taxes in the Patient Protection Affordable Care Act, and we need to start peeling those taxes back. Capital gains tax, dividends taxes were all a part of it. You know, the Cadillac tax on insurance plans, tanning tax. Those things need to be handled, and we need to have a GOP that you know, if I were the president, call in all of those senators, call in all of the GOP House of Representatives, and they stay at the White House, you know, order pizza, whatever, until we hammer it out and we get a solution for the American people. And then they go back up there on Capitol Hill and they get it passed. That's the level of involvement, engagement, and leadership that we need to see now.
All right, we got to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We will have more in just a minute. Colonel Alan West, our friend, is back with us. One question. Would you go into the White House if the president called you?
Of course I would, because it's not so much about the president. It's about serving my country, and that's something that I took an oath to do back on 31 July 1982.
Well, you'd be great there. I think you'd be an amazing addition for the president in the White House. I hope that happens, actually, but now that you'd be willing to do it. Listen, a lot of people, it's hard to do. Hey, the message you sent to the media political elites last fall, you sent loud and clear. You wanted what? Economic policy focused on the middle class, not the political class. Your lives, not their lives. The media elites and the sewer swamp creatures didn't get the message. And they've been working nonstop since Election Day to undo your vote, what you want. And this summer, you've got all sorts of activists out there, and the media, obviously, against the president. And they've been wanting to go out there and overwhelm town halls, especially of good people like in the Freedom Caucus, et cetera. And we can't let that happen, because there are good people trying to get the job done. And you could show up and your voice can be heard. And that's why I'm urging you to go to StopIgnoringMyVoice.com now. It's a website, StopIgnoringMyVoice.com. Find out what you can do. Why? You voted for less money going to D.C., more money in the pockets of hardworking Americans and taxpayers like you. You voted for tax cuts. You want to drain the swamp. You don't like these stalled delay tactics that are being employed every day. And don't let the mainstream media, the Democrats, steal your voice. So go to this website now, StopIgnoringMyVoice.com, and find out how you can be heard. That's StopIgnoringMyVoice.com. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. Colonel Alan West is our guest, and much more. Right, as we continue, Colonel Alan West is with us as we've been talking about all the issues that have gone on this week. Do you think this has a lasting impact on the president leading up to Steve Bannon's firing? What do you think of Bannon or Steve Bannon's leaving? You never know what happens in those situations. I think he put in a letter of resignation. What are your thoughts? How does this impact things?
Well, that will remain to be seen. And we'll have to see, does Steve Bannon depart and go out and be an ally for the president or an adversary of the president? So that will determine and let us know how that separation occurred based upon how Mr. Bannon goes forward. He could end up doing great things outside of the White House and having the influence on making sure that the base is engaged, or he can be a detriment to the president. So we don't know until we see what happens, you know, a month or 2 months from now. That will determine what this separation was all about.
The agenda items that I mentioned, and I mentioned four of them. One is the president's economic plan, the tax cuts. I don't even think you need the tax code overhaul at this particular point. I mean, you can certainly change very specific points in the tax code, mm-hmm. but I'd get the economy moving, trying to get people, the forgotten men and women that voted in this election in poverty, on food stamps, mm-hmm. and out of work, serving them first seems to be the top priority.
No, you're absolutely right. How it is not that hard for us to say we're going to have a one-time repatriation of the trillions of dollars of capital that are offshore. That's going to be retroactive to the 1st of January, and it's going to be for this entire year. And then after that, we will come back with a reduced corporate business tax rate. So my recommendation would be a one-time repatriation, 8 to 10%, you know, on that, those trillions of dollars of capital. And that revenue that you generate there, that's the revenue for your infrastructure plan. And then you come back and you have a 15 to 20% corporate business tax rate, just a straight flat tax. And that is what they are looking for with the markets. You make that retroactive. Then we got to look at the personal income tax rate, and especially for small businesses. We've got to make sure that we are doing the right thing with the tax code so the small businesses can grow. You look at capital gains the dividends taxes. Why not we just take those back to the Reagan era? Everything we need to do has to be, you know, how do we get economic growth going here? We have to have that 3 to 4% GDP growth. The Obama era, 1%, that's anemic. That cannot be the new normal. And then the other thing that we have to do, we have to start talking about the spending and budget process there on Capitol Hill. This baseline budget process that they have, you know, in our legislature, where every single year the federal government spends more money, they've got to do exactly what every American does, and that's zero-based budgeting. We don't spend over what we bring in, and the federal government needs to be the exact same way. So we can do all that we want with tax reform or changing tax rates, but the bottom line is that if we don't get the spending of Washington, D.C. under control, we don't get the federal government under control, and there's some big picture things that the president needs to do. Let's go back and look at how we restructure the federal government. I believe instead of the three separate HHS, education, and HUD, you know, that's what Jimmy Carter separated out. Why don't we go back and reconsolidate them?
Well, I hope you get into the White House. You'd be a terrific addition. Colonel Alan West, thank you as always for being with us. 800-941-SEAN is our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. News Roundup, Information Overload will lighten things up. Oh, good grief. We have to listen to that Katie Hopkins, the Gobby One music when we get back. We'll find out how Katie's feeling today. You never know. I have to get the dump button ready any second. We'll continue.
Coming up next, our final News Roundup and Information Overload Hour.
Let's hit our Friday, Florida, Georgia Line concert series. Let's get Katie Hopkins hip with music, and we'll start right now. Happy Friday. Put your smile hat on.
Hammer and a nail, stacking them bales. I'm dog tired by the 5 o'clock hour, but I'm ready to raise some hell.
Pass it around here. Temptation in Katie's ear.
Thank you very much indeed.
Come on, sing along. It's how we do it around here. Come on.
What happened to This Is How We Roll?
All right, we got it. Ready?
Yeah, you can. Okay.
Where the party's at? Right here with Katie Hopkins.
Oh, this is how we roll.
Radio.
Oh,
up. This is how we roll. This is how we do. We're burning down the night.
Shooting bullets at the moon. Wow. This is how we roll. You go, Katie. Come on, turn it up.
This has not improved at all.
How we do it. We rolling in the town. With nothing else to do, we take another lap around. Yeah, holler at your boy. If you need a ride. Come on, Katie. No, we rolling time. Go. Windows tinted, how fresh my baby is in a shotgun seat. Them kisses are for me, though. Automatic like a free throw. This life I live, it might not be for you, but it's for me, though. Let's go. This is how we roll.
This is how we roll.
I just turn and look at Katie. Whoa.
This is how we roll. Are we done?
No, we're going to slow it down now.
You've got to do it all the way to the end. Oh, my God.
Holy.
I'm an old lady, Sean. I really haven't got time for this sort of crap.
No, come on. Now, listen, this is going to put you in a good mood. You're ruining the mood. You're ruining it.
I could be doing it. I could be cleaning my bathroom. I mean, really, Sean.
Just listen to the music. Ready? Come on. I want you to sing this with me. You broke through and saved me. You're an angel. Tell me you never leave. Because you're the first thing. Sing it, ready? Come on, Katie. You're holy, holy. Come on.
Holy. Oh, I don't know how to. I
am loving you. Come on. One more time, ready?
I need a hack. Holy. I need some dungarees. Holy. Maybe a little knotted handkerchief around my neck. I am loving you.
I am loving you. Come on, this puts you in a good mood. Listen to the words. The river bank where I was baptized, cleansed from the demons. Cleansed from the demons. That were killing my freedom. Killing your freedom.
Oh, Christ, don't talk about killing my freedom. Christ, not in Western Europe. Jesus. You're singing, babe. Hallelujah. Yeah, pray to God. Is that all we can do right now, Sean? Jesus.
Tell me you're never leaving, Katie.
I'm never leaving.
The first thing.
Run over in the street by a truck.
First thing I can believe in. Sing it. Go.
Holy. Oh, someone put the man out of his misery. That man needs a good vet. God.
I can't think.
Also, I found that my cat got caught in the bloody door.
All right, Katie Hopkins, I did that just for you because it's Friday.
Yeah,
well, come on, that's better music than that ridiculous, you know, thing that you make me play every time you're...
I made that kind of noise when I jam my big toe on the workbench in the kitchen.
Seriously, you don't like that music at all. Come on.
I mean, I quite like it, but you didn't play my normal gobby intro. So that's
I did so play your gobby.
Right,
I did play the Katie Hopkins gobby intro.
What,
I played
you?
It, see? Then I went into some good music.
Oh, I was chatting to Linda. I'm sorry.
Oh, you were shouting at Linda. How are you this week?
No,
how's everything?
Chatting at Linda.
Oh, chatting. Chatting.
I was chatting with Linda.
Well, okay. And what did she say?
Well, we made a little plan together about a word that I was going to use later to scare you. But I don't know. I think I need to warm you up first before I lump it right at your
door. You definitely need to warm him up, Katie. Don't do
it
now,
please. Yeah, I
need to
warm him up. Yeah, I'll warm you up. And then we'll...
I got a question. Is this going to get me in trouble, get me boycotted, get me fired?
No, it'll just make you blush.
By the way, if all of
your appetizers are going to, like, run really, really fast away.
Why do you want me? You know, if it's like the sun rises, the sun sets, everybody's after me already, so you might as well just say it. I don't care.
Really, exactly. Don't think you're alone, Sean. I'm with you.
No,
babe.
I know. I mean, I don't care at all.
People on my back. Yeah. Like, no. If the Muslim Council of Britain could personally kill one person on this planet, it would 100% be me, for sure.
Oh,
so
stop.
You and me both.
You're a better person than that. You are.
It's been quite a time here, Sean Hannity, since we spoke last. I tell you that.
Well, you had a let's go back in time, and we have talked a lot about, I remember after the London Bridge attack, and we've had all the other attacks. Now we had, now it's up to 14 dead in Barcelona, over 100 people injured. Did you see the videos, the carnage last night?
I saw the videos, and it was one of those videos I wish I had never clicked on. And it's my own fault, and I blame myself entirely. But then also part of me says, somehow you need to connect with what it means when a truck runs people over. You know, we just sort of say that now as if it's something standard, like going for a jab at the doctors or, you know, somebody having a cold or the flu. It's not. It's horrific, and people look weird and distorted and like ragdolls, and your brain can't process that those are real humans that have literally been squashed.
Oh, what do you think? I mean, is Europe ever going to get it? Because I even see Merkel doubling down on stupid again.
No, she's doubling down on stupid. No problem at all. The leader of the kind of the Welsh Party, kind of the random bit of Wales, random bit of the UK that's on the left-hand side. It's a small bit. She just came out after she saw the pictures of Barcelona, and she went, oh, no, the far right are at it again, as if somehow that was going to be related to anything to do with Charlottesville last week. And, of course, we've seen exactly the same thing all over again, where when it's an attack by an Islamist extremist, it's nothing to do with Islam. But when it's one person in Charlottesville, it's everything to do with everyone from the right wing ever. And I think we've seen that. And then we've just had a knife attack in Finland, two dead, yelling Allahu Akbar as he stabbed them to death. And then another stabbing in Germany just happened, although they're saying that that's not terror, although I don't know what being stabbed in the street is, if not terrifying.
You know, in one sense, I got the CIA apparently warned Spain about this, and I'm not criticizing their intelligence community here, because as we both know, this is extraordinarily difficult in terms of stopping these terrorists. But they did do a good job, and they were able to stop and arrest about six other people that had planned other attacks, because that's very much the MO of ISIS and radical Islamists, that they don't hit you once. They try and hit you, like on 9/11, they hit you four times in a day.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose the slightly concerning thing is for them to be able to go straight to these other places where the terrorists were also operating miles away from the original attack with the truck in the street, is that these people are on the watch list. You know, these are people that are being watched, whether they're high up on the watch list or not. And that's always a concern. And I've heard a lot from Spanish friends that the word there is that Catalonia has been kind of flooding Barcelona and places with migrants, with Muslim migrants, in order to try and keep the vote for independence. So almost bringing in a new wave of people in order to get votes. And I think that's something people in the UK can relate to, where we see areas of the UK that have been completely lost, we would say, to Muslim populations. And of course, they always vote Labour or Democrats in your case. You know, and there's a sense that we're bringing in populations that will vote a certain way. And that's certainly the word on the street in Spain, although it can't be articulated in the press.
Well, I don't even mind helping people out, but I don't think taking every single person on from countries and cultures that differ so vastly is necessarily a good thing, because unless there is assimilation and adoption of the values of people that you're bringing into the country, and I keep using the same example because it's the one that works best, is if you grow up under Sharia and you think that you could tell Katie Hopkins how to dress and Katie Hopkins that she can't drive, and you kill gays and lesbians as a matter of just a penalty for them being who they are, and then you throw them off roofs and hang them. And if you persecute Christians and Jews, I don't think you're going to fit in very well.
No, and it is concerning from, I mean, you'll understand completely, given that you seem to be the punchbag for so many people, idiots. Is that we had, you know, we had an article in The Sun, like a big tabloid newspaper. I think it's one of the most popular in the UK. I used to write for it. And they called out Muslim grooming gangs, you know, these rape squads. They called them, they just happened to put the phrase in, the Muslim problem. And because of that, mass outrage, and a Labour MP got sacked from her post because she had written an article about the problem of rape gangs. It's so much that the tide of public opinion and what you're allowed to say has gone the other way. We're not even allowed to state the factual obvious anymore because it's, you know, insulting to the rest of the Muslim population. It's a really curious
Listen, there are good people in every race, religion, and background, but particularly those that adopt the radical interpretation of the Quran or support Sharia law. We know what that means. And there has been no-go zones, even though people will not even be allowed to say it, apparently. And on top of that, you have 80 Sharia courts, 80-plus Sharia courts in Great Britain where you live, and that is not particularly good for anybody because it means they're separate and apart, and they're not part of the Great Britain. If you're going to have your own court system and your own justice system and your own way of life and you live in a separate community and you don't even want, you know, services from the state, it's ridiculous.
It has gone a little bit too crazy, I think. And I think, reflecting, I guess, a view of many people outside of London, so outside of the big metropolitan kind of left-wing liberal areas, the rest of the UK are kind of a little bit tired of getting messages on Twitter from Macron, you know, we stand with Barcelona, Merkel, we stand with Barcelona, and we had the same from Hillary Clinton, I stand with Barcelona. And you kind of want to go, that's lovely. Now you're all standing together in Barcelona. Can one of you tell us what you're going to do about this?
Well, if we don't make changes,
telling us you're standing.
If they don't make adjustments and changes, then it's going to be every other week, every 3 weeks, every four, whatever it is, and it's never going to stop. And people, innocent people, are dying. They're being bludgeoned. It was so unsightly and gruesome. I'm like, how many more times do we have to see it until we understand what's happening? It's not that complicated. Stay right there. Katie Hopkins, the gobby one. All right, as we continue, the gobby one, Katie Hopkins, is with us. What are the people in Great Britain saying about all the political stuff that's going on here?
My goodness. I mean, it's been really odd for us to watch you guys and see you, I don't know, America feeling like it's going, kind of closing in on itself with these two sides fighting like they are.
Slow down a little. I mean, I am watching what's going on in your country, too. It's not exactly rainbows, cotton candy, and Ferris wheels.
It's a disaster. Of course, and I would always say we look to America as the hope. Like, for me, America was always the hope of what we are, and that you should look at Europe and say we don't want to be like Europe, of course. But it breaks my heart to see so many people working so actively against Trump. And people forget every time, people in the media forget every time, not you and me, darling, obviously, they forget he was democratically elected into his position. And every time he stands up and talks, I am grateful he is there. And if I could, I would stand behind him and hold on to his waist just to keep him upright, keep talking, keep doing what you're doing, because he represents the people that elected him. He does not represent the idiots who have a voice in the media so often. And that drives me crazy.
All right. Katie Hopkins, the gobby one. I got through the entire interview without finding out whatever it was that you were going to tell me,
I was going to talk about my vagina.
I got to go. Very nice to talk to you, Katie. She gets me in trouble every time she's on this program. Every single time she's on, I get in trouble for what she says. And she speaks so fast, I can't even keep up with her and do my normal texting and emailing, which I usually do during the show.
Stop being mean.
Really? All right, we're going to start. All right, when we come back, we're going to check in with Congressman Brian Babin, his concerns over Robert Mueller's investigation into the president, and much more.
All right, let's go to some audio tape and remind you of James Comey. Remember, he leaks to the New York Times. Then, of course, we got Rosen. Then we've got unmasking. You know who I think is going to be in the most trouble about this? The following people: Samantha Power, Ben Rhodes, Susan Rice, and I'm making a prediction, Valerie Jarrett. I'm just guessing, of course. I don't know anything. We're not ahead of the curve ever compared to the rest of them. And, of course, we got Mueller's team and how corrupt they are. Anyway, we now know that there are concerns over Mueller's investigation into President Trump.
We have a congressman, by the way, Congressman Babin, who's going to join us in a second, sent a letter calling for Mueller to publicly testify in front of Congress. Finally, somebody's getting what we've been saying, but let's take a look and a trip down memory lane and how we got to this special counsel to begin with.
But Mr. Clapper then went on to say that, to his knowledge, there was no evidence of collusion between members of the Trump campaign and the Russians. We did not conclude any evidence in our report. And when I say our report, that is the NSA, FBI, and CIA, with my office, the Director of National Intelligence, that had anything, any reflection of collusion between the members of the Trump campaign and the Russians. There was no evidence of that in our report. Was Mr. Clapper wrong when he said that?
I think he's right about characterizing the report, which you all have read.
We did not include any evidence in our report, and I say our, that's NSA, FBI, and CIA, with my office, the Director of National Intelligence, that had anything, that had any reflection of collusion between members of the Trump campaign and the Russians. There was no evidence of that included in our report.
Have you seen anything, either intelligence briefings, through intelligence briefings, anything to back up any of the accusations that
you've
made?
They have the documentation that they did the hacking.
The hacking.
On the DNC.
Right.
And on some of us, you know, that have.
But the collusion, though.
No, we have not.
Do you have evidence that there was, in fact, collusion between Trump associates and Russia during the campaign?
Not at this time.
Have you seen anything that suggests any collusion between the Russians and the Trump campaign?
Well, there's an awful lot of smoke there, let's put it that way. People that might have said they were involved, to what extent they were involved, to what extent the president might have known about these people or whatever. There's nothing there from that standpoint that we have seen directly linking our president to any of that.
Did evidence exist of collusion, coordination, conspiracy between the Trump campaign and Russian state actors at the time you learned of 2016 efforts?
I don't know whether or not such collusion, that's your term, such collusion existed. I don't know.
The big questions, of course, is there any evidence of collusion you have seen yet? Is there?
Listen, there is a lot of smoke. We have no smoking gun at this point, but there is a lot of smoke.
Dianne Feinstein has said there's no evidence of collusion. So collusion between whom? Can you tell us that?
I'm not prepared to say that there's proof you could take to a jury, but I can say that there is enough that we ought to be investigating.
At the time you separated from service in January of 2017, had you seen any evidence that Donald Trump or any member of his campaign colluded, conspired, or coordinated with the Russians or anyone else to infiltrate or impact our voter infrastructure?
Not beyond what has been out there open source, and not beyond anything that I'm sure this committee has already seen and heard before directly from the intelligence community.
You said after you were dismissed, you gave information to a friend so that friend could get that information into the public media.
Correct.
What kind of information was that? What kind of information did you give to a friend?
That the Flynn conversation, that the president had asked me to let the Flynn, I mean, I'm forgetting my exact own words, but the conversation in the Oval Office.
So you didn't consider your memo or your sense of that conversation to be a government document? You considered to be somehow your own personal document that you could share with the media as you wanted to?
Correct.
Through a friend?
I understood this to be my recollection recorded of my conversation with the president. As a private citizen, I felt free to share that. I thought it very important to get it out. The appointment of a special counsel should offer great, especially given who that person is, great comfort to Americans, no matter what your political affiliation is, that this will be done independently, competently, and honestly.
And do you believe that he should have full authority, Mr. Mueller, to be able to pursue that investigation?
Yes, and knowing him well over the years, if there's something that he thinks he needs, he will speak up about it.
Do you believe he should have full independence?
Oh, yeah. And he wouldn't be part of it if he wasn't going to get full independence.
Did you seek the names of people involved in, to unmask the names of people involved in the Trump transition, the Trump campaign, people surrounding the president-elect?
Let me be clear.
In order to spy on them,
absolutely,
order to expose them.
Absolutely not for any political purposes to spy, expose anything.
All right, joining us now, Congressman Brian Babin, friend of the program. And Congressman, welcome back. And you sent this letter, and you now have expressed concerns. You want an investigation, and you want certainly the Robert Mueller to come testify about all the issues involved that I've been discussing on this program and on TV. Tell us what you're doing.
Absolutely, Sean. Great to be with you again. I just, you know, my initial thoughts when Mueller was appointed, I thought, well, okay, we'll get to the bottom of this, all of this Russia business. But the more information I learned, the more concerned I became. He was very close with Mr. Comey. His hirings on his team raised a lot of red flags with me. And quite frankly, I got some of this information initially off of your show, listening to you. And the more we check into this, the more concerned I am that this is not going to be an impartial investigation. And I think, you know, this man, Mr. Mueller, has got tremendous power, like any, even more so than a U.S. attorney, because he had no confirmation process. There was no hearings. And we don't know a whole lot about his motivations, and we don't know, other than what we've heard from people like you, about these folks that he's hired. And so I feel like that it's time to bring this team out of the shadows and let the American people hear them answer some questions, hopefully in front of either the Senate or the House Judiciary Committees or both, so that we can learn what we're getting for our money. This thing promises to cost millions of dollars. The open-endedness of this investigation for time, jurisdiction, scope of jurisdiction, I think are some answers that we need to have. And so that's why we wrote these letters, trying to get our colleagues to join on and see if we could get some answers to some of these questions.
Tell us, like, for example, when you look at, you have eight people that are Democratic donors. One happens to be the former attorney for Hillary Rodham Clinton and preventing FOIA information requests as it relates to the Clinton Foundation, but eight donors to Obama, Hillary, and Democrats. And of the 16, not one of them has donated any Republican. Now, that sounds like an abusively biased stack deck to me. And then you look at Mueller's law firm, and 99.8% of the funds that they have raised for politicians in the last election went to Hillary.
That's exactly right. I mean, cannot, and this is an answer I think that Mr. Mueller needs to give in front of the American people, and that is, can you find no one for your team that is neutral? Can you find no one but partisan Democrats, seemingly, who have been major contributors, donors to numerous Democrat causes and candidates, or, as you just said, work for the Clinton Foundation or work for a law clerk for Ms. Ginsburg, Justice Ginsburg on the Supreme Court. These are all answers that need to be made by Mr. Mueller. And I'm very concerned that we're going to have just a witch hunt. I've seen a lot of smoke, but so far I've seen no fire, no evidence of Russian connections. He's moved off of the Russia thing to find out about obstructionism. And quite frankly, we've seen literally years, of the previous administration and those team members, those people that work for Mr. Obama, where we've seen more than just smoke. We've seen some fire. We've seen people illegally unmasked. We've seen collusion.
Where are all the investigations into these matters, Congressman, which I've been calling for? Hillary's email, we know that she mishandled classified top secret special access program information. We know that she also destroyed such information. Both are crimes. We know that she acid washed and bleach bit the hard drive. She inappropriately put it in a mom and pop shop bathroom. We know that five foreign intelligence agencies got a hold of the information. We're still, just this week, we found another 7,000 of the missing emails. There's certainly an opportunity for the Attorney General to look into that. Why do I believe if I acid washed my computer that's under subpoena and deleted emails under subpoena, and I get rid of, you know, devices like BlackBerries and smash them with hammers when I said I only had one device, and when you send to the FBI the only BlackBerry I've left, which doesn't have a SIM card in it, which is useless to the FBI, and then the whole Uranium One deal, $145 million. I'd like to know where that money came from that went to the Clinton Foundation, really came from. Follow the money. I don't like Ukrainian election interference, and we have evidence of that. That's not being investigated. The unmasking, the leaking, surveillance, you know, 350% increase in unmasking in an election year, and Samantha Power. Why would the U.N. ambassador ever need to unmask anybody? But she unmasked hundreds of people in 2016. Does that sound right to you? Where's the investigation into this?
And then we find out that that President Obama had learned that there was Russian collusion going on and absolutely sat on it, did nothing. And now we're expected to believe that all this corruption occurred just in the last few months by the Trump administration, when I think if we have a fair and impartial investigation going on, we ought to be seeing some of the previous administration being investigated as well, and ask many, many tough questions to find out exactly what's going on. The American people deserve it. They need to know how much this special prosecutor's team is going to cost the American taxpayer. There's just too much unknown here. And that's why I'm hoping that your listeners will contact their congressman and ask them to get on this letter and see if we can, you know, and just ask for strong consideration by the judiciary committees of both houses to ask Mr. Mueller some of these questions.
Well, I want to thank you for what you're doing. You're providing a great service. You're pointing out, and the judge is equally bad who served on the Democrats and the Judiciary Committee. I mean, I this is all not good. It's also in a jurisdiction where Donald Trump got 4% of the vote. So to me, it seems like the deck is stacked. This can go on, as you pointed out in your letter, for years. We have investigative creep already. The original purpose of the investigation is long gone. And as you point out, you know what? We need answers to these questions, and I hope every congressman and senator pays attention to it. Congressman Babin, thank you for your leadership on this. I'm amazed, finally, that somebody has done it, and I appreciate you doing it. Thank you.
You're welcome, Sean. Thank you for what you do as well. It's always good to talk to you.
All right, my friend, 800-941-SEAN, our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. Right, that's going to wrap things up for today. I want to say one thing as we end this week here. Watch the story that about Julian Assange. Now, why is that so important? 11 years he's not been wrong. He meets with Dana Rohrabacher. He says to Dana Rohrabacher, the congressman from California, everything that he had told me. And as Assange vowing to prove, and again, he'd be the one guy in the world that knows, considering WikiLeaks published, and he publishes WikiLeaks, who exactly gave him the information as it relates to the DNC emails. But anyway, they had a three-hour meeting. They covered a wide array of issues, including the WikiLeaks exposure of DNC emails during the presidential election. And he said, Rohrabacher, that Julian emphatically stated Russians were not involved in the hacking or disclosure. Now, Mueller has an obligation to go and find the truth. And we're going to demand in a big way next week that and so much more. So my advice to Mueller is, instead of wasting your time hiring more Clinton donors or people that you're going to have to end up firing or have to end up resigning, you may need to get on a plane and meet with Assange. And then I'd say to Congress, you have subpoena powers and you have investigative powers. And after 11 months, there's been no intel proof given about Russia-Trump collusion. So maybe you have an obligation to find the truth. Have a great weekend. I'll be back here on Monday, and we'll see you then. All right, who's there for heroes or their families left behind when a service member or a first responder dies or is catastrophically injured in the line of duty? Who helps our country's homeless vets? And who helps our nation to never forget 9/11/01? I'll tell you who. It's the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. Now the foundation's Gold Star, Fallen First Responders, Smart Home, and Homeless Veterans Programs, and the foundation's Never Forget programs engage people in 9/11 remembrances all across America. Over 80 runs, walks, climbs a year, dozens of golf outings, and the Tunnel to Towers 9/11 Institute. They're educating kids from kindergarten through 12th grade to help our nation keep their vow to never forget. Never forget the sacrifices of our country's greatest heroes. They're hoping all of us will donate $11 a month. Just go to their website, the letter T, the number 2, the letter T.org, the letter T, number 2, letter T.org for the Tunnel to Towers Foundation.
The following is a high-five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
Welcome to Burger Yippee. Would you like a hot apple pie today?
Yes, yes, yeah, I won! Woohoo!
So that's a yes on the apple pie?
I just went big time playing High Five Casino on my phone. Real cash prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. Yeah!
So yes or no on the apple pie?
Woo! I won again!
I'll take that as a yes. Drive around.
Have you had your high-five moment today? Only at HighFiveCasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
Hollywood is under siege from an external force. Now, the same Hollywood that sold the American dream, they are now making nightmares a reality. Many major films make choices to appease the Chinese Communist Party to be distributed in China. Now, you can join Tiffany Meyer, an investigative reporter, in the Hollywood Takeover brought to you by the Epoch Times, where she reveals how the CCP exerts control over some of the major studios. Now, don't miss the most important documentary about Hollywood yet. And for a limited time, you can watch the first 10 minutes for free at HollywoodTakeover.com/Sean, S-E-A-N.